Continuing education is more essential and more strategically valuable than ever. The old model of front-loaded education is no longer viable. Today's learners need relevant and flexible CE to keep pace.
And we have a free resource to help your learning business provide that kind of high-impact learning. The Strategic CE Playbook introduces a practical framework to help you strategically design and deliver continuing education programs that will succeed in today's complex and competitive market.
The playbook focuses on three essential levers: personalization, portfolio thinking, and performance.
To learn more about the three levers and how to use them effectively, get your copy of the Strategic CE Playbook at leadinglearning.com/strategic-CE. If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. The year is still new, and so in this episode, number 444, we want to offer some ideas we believe will shape learning businesses in 2025 and beyond.
In our last episode, we covered key data points from our most recent annual survey of learning businesses, including survey respondents' top strategic goals for 2025, the top drivers for those strategic goals, trends and issues impacting their strategy, challenges with enrollments and/or registrations, barriers to innovation in education offerings, and top areas of investment for the year ahead.
And we now have four main ideas to share in this episode, and each is grounded in the data from our annual survey, as well as our experience with an observation of learning businesses and the global market for continuing education, professional development, and other lifelong learning.
So let's dive in. And as you said, Jeff, we have four ideas, four takeaways to share, but they all are united by a single theme.
That's right. That sort of overarching theme that we're seeing is resourcefulness. We heard a lot in the survey about the need for resources being a challenge, and we feel that there are ways that organizations could better leverage their limited resources, and we feel there's some real opportunities to do that.
And I think we'll get into some of those opportunities as part of sharing these ideas, these takeaways. So the first one that we have to share is aiding strategy, and we're oh so cleverly capitalizing the AI in aiding. I know you don't have that visual since this is an audio only podcast, but just picture it, capital A, capital I, aiding strategy, because for us, this is about the greater role that AI could, and we believe should, be playing in learning businesses. And based on the survey data that we collected, AI doesn't seem to be as far along as it should be. We asked in the survey, where are you in implementing artificial intelligence in your education offerings?
And, well, organizations were not quite as far along as we would have liked for them to be. 34.5% said they are just discussing AI internally and have no clear implementation plan.
And then another 21.6% aren't even having the discussions about AI yet. Well, that adds up to a little bit over a majority of folks who either aren't having discussions or are having discussions but haven't really begun to do anything, which seems to indicate there's a lot of room for opportunity here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is the time to be experimenting in a variety of ways around AI, seeing what you can do with that, whether that's helping you with planning, whether it's helping you with creating, whether it's helping you with your data analysis. There's a lot of things that AI can be doing. We're trying our best to start putting AI to use in what we're doing at Tagoras and at Leading Learning. I will say we actually came up with the aiding strategy without AI's help. We came up with that on our own.
Wow, that's impressive. Yeah, we want to make sure that folks know that we get full credit for that. Indeed, yeah. But I think that, interestingly, we re-aired a conversation with Mary Byers just a little bit ago. But one of the things she really talks about in that conversation that I got to have with her is around doing pilots. Mm-hmm. And I think that where we are with AI, like, this is a time ripe for pilots. So if you aren't doing anything yet, be thinking about what could you be testing out and trying and planning. And if you are doing pilots, great. Make sure that you're giving it the attention you need, that you're looking at what the results are of those pilots, and then figuring out what that means for perhaps broader implementation of the pilots or other pilots to maybe refine the idea. But the idea is start doing some things with AI.
Yeah. And, you know, whenever you're doing those sorts of pilots or you're doing, you know, the minimum viable products or whatever the case might be, make sure that you do have accountability assigned to that, that there are folks in your organization who are actually charged with, we're going to run this experiment that involves AI. And I, you know, whoever is named to lead that experiment is accountable for following through on that experiment and reporting on the results and leading the way in whatever the follow-up plans are going to be from whatever you find out from the experiment.
And then, Jeff, as you hinted when we said that all of our takeaways, all of the four ideas we're going to offer tied to this theme of resourcefulness, we saw in the survey that a lot of learning businesses feel like they don't have adequate resources to do what they need to do. And AI certainly represents a potential for helping to fill some of that need for additional resources. Maybe there is work that current staff are doing that AI could reduce the time that and the effort that they need to spend on that, or, you know, ways to sort of fill in some of the perhaps what might be perceived now as human resource lack.
Yeah, we sort of glossed over it as we're heading into talking about AI here, about the different areas where it can help you. I mean, AI can be very powerful in analyzing and leveraging data. And we know from past surveys that, you know, organizations are more and more focused on the data that they're getting from their learners and also the data that they're getting from their markets to be able to make product decisions. AI can really, really, you know, help you take a closer look at your data and make decisions from it. Of course, you have to back up from there and say, you know, do we have good approaches to getting data in the first place? Do we have the policies around data that we need? So it may require some foundational work, but AI can certainly help with data.
And I know that we very often hear from learning businesses that learner engagement is a big issue for them, and AI certainly holds promise there as well that can tie to using data, as you were just talking about, Jeff, so that we can then better understand and better serve learner needs. It could also mean leveraging AI to help with personalizing the learning experience, that holy grail of personalization that we've been talking about for at least a decade at this point. But AI begins to hopefully make that much more feasible because it does require fewer human resources to make it happen.
Yeah, and those are two of the top two issues that we heard from respondents who are using or planning to use AI. They're going to use it for personalization, for better engagement potentially, or they are going to use it around data. Another one of those is just around creation. They're planning to use the AI to help them create, and we would extend that into maybe helping to curate the right offerings, the right products to meet learner needs, which again goes back to that idea of engagement. If you're creating the right products and you've got a way to get the products out the door, you're curating your products in the most appropriate way for your learners, you're bound to be helping to bolster engagement. Continuing education is more essential and more strategically valuable than ever. The old model of front-loaded education is no longer viable. Today's learners need relevant and flexible CE to keep pace.
And we have a free resource to help your learning business provide that kind of high-impact learning. The Strategic CE Playbook introduces a practical framework to help you strategically design and deliver continuing education programs that will succeed in today's complex and competitive market.
The Playbook focuses on three essential levers: personalization, portfolio thinking, and performance.
To learn more about the three levers and how to use them effectively, get your copy of the Strategic CE Playbook at leadinglearning.com/strategic-CE. So we've talked about our first takeaway, aiding strategy. Our second takeaway that we have to offer is what we're characterizing as revamping revenue, and maybe more specifically, the need to revamp revenue.
Yeah, I mean, that came through loud and clear as a big concern for participants in the survey. They were concerned either directly about revenue, or they were concerned about increasing registrations and enrollment, which of course has that sort of attachment to revenue. And that was also just a big priority. And of course, they're also concerned about marketing, investing more in marketing, having more resources for marketing, to go back to our whole resourcefulness theme here. There's the need to have the resources necessary for increasing revenue. But one of the things we like to focus on is finding more ways to get revenue from what you've already got.
Right. And, we have some different ways that we've seen learning businesses use, that learning businesses can adopt and try out. I mean, one is simply by raising prices.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, I feel like that's sort of the third rail of the learning business, of most businesses. People are always very reluctant to raise prices. And I think with a lot of the world that we deal with, I hear this a lot in the trade and professional association world, for example, that raising those member dues or raising prices of any kind is just kind of anathema. You feel like you're going to lose a lot of people. But in our experience, price elasticity for education is often much, much lower than organizations think. And that means that, raising prices doesn't decrease enrollments to any significant degree. I mean, there's a limit to that. You can raise them so much that it will impact it, but there's usually a margin there of 10, 20, even 30% that you can raise prices and it's not going to significantly impact your volume, but of course it's going to immediately go to your top line.
Right. And you can simply raise prices, or you can look to add some value to then hopefully make that increase in price a little bit more palatable. You're going to give the learner a little bit more value to go along with that higher price tag. And we have a tool called the Value Ramp.
The Value Ramp, yeah.
That we've talked about before on the podcast we've used with organizations. It's a very simple tool, but it just helps you see how value and price relate. And in our mind, usually that means that the higher the value, the higher the price. And so if you think that your audience might be averse to an outright price increase, then think about what value can you add. And value doesn't necessarily have to come with a lot of effort or a lot of cost internally.
That's right. And the idea there is if you're adding value, you're moving a product up the value ramp, so you're able to increase its price because the perceived value is higher. So the price can be higher. And then we also have tools like the product value profile, which gives you a way to look at a product to figure out what are the levers you pull to actually increase that value and move it up the value ramp.
So simply raising prices is one way to help you revamp your revenue. Another way to revamp revenue and get more out of what you already have is by leveraging different product and pricing configurations.
A survey question that we asked and didn't say a whole lot about when we presented the results on this, though those who participated got these results. We asked about a range of product and pricing models, and this included things from bundling to subscriptions to buy one, get one offers. We had a number of things that we listed, and we found that most respondents weren't really doing these things in a low percentage plan to. So they really weren't experimenting with their sort of product and their pricing models. So there could be, this is another area, kind of like AI, where there could be some significantly higher levels of experimentation. Because if you do those sorts of things, the subscriptions, the bundling, the buy one, get one, you're going to get more purchases from your current customers. And you're also in the process going to attract new customers who like these new models that you're trying out. But again, most of the respondents indicated they're not doing this, don't plan to do this. We also didn't see a lot of evidence that organizations are engaged in doing business-to-business selling, selling to institutions, to corporations, to government agencies, whatever's the right target in your particular market. Still not enough of that going on, and that's just another clear area for revenue growth that's sitting right in front of most learning businesses.
Another way to help you revamp your revenue could be by focusing on retention, and retention, in our mind, goes hand in hand with engagement. And we've already touched on just the fact that learner engagement is often a concern and a goal of learning businesses. And we know that it is easier to sell to a current customer than to go out and have to acquire a new customer. And so if you can keep that current customer, if that current customer is satisfied, then really focusing on that, focusing in on the retention, focusing in on what is going to keep that customer happy, that's a very good place to spend some mental energy and perhaps some dollars.
Yeah, and this is another one of those just perfect areas where learning and business intersect. You want engagement, of course, because that's going to support learning, But engagement provides a great customer experience in the world of learning, and that keeps people coming back. So that's three: raising prices, leveraging different product and pricing configurations, and then getting serious about retention.
And we do have a learner engagement resource that we'll that's be true. Sure to link to in the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode444.
That's right. Yet another free resource. We already mentioned the value ramp. We already mentioned the product value profile. And then we've got this engagement tool. Listeners know we've got tons of free tools here at Leading Learning that are there for you to put to use on your own or with your team. So come and get those. The fourth area we'll mention around revenue in terms of really, you know, leveraging what you probably already have or could get to pretty easily is leveraging other people's networks, which is a term we take from our colleague, Tom Poland, who's a real expert at doing this. And you can think of other people's networks, or you might think of other organizations' networks. So these could be the partnerships that you can form, whether, you know, if you're an association, it might be with an academic institution or even with one of your subject matter experts. If you're an academic institution, it might be with an association. But this is something that's going to give you access to a whole network of people you may not otherwise have access to, which of course are your prospective customers at that point.
Right. And so these four ideas that we just gave you around revamping revenue, the good news is that most of these don't really require major resources. This mm-hmm. is kind of working with what you already have in terms of products available. But these are different ways of working with what you already have. And that's how it ties, in our mind, to this resourcefulness theme that we set out at the beginning, because we understand that so many organizations are feeling resource-strapped. So it's about how can you really make sure that you're getting every ounce of revenue and impact and reach out of what you already have in your portfolio.
Yep. So far, we've got AI, which can help you make the most of your current resources, can really give you some leverage. And then we've got these revenue ideas where you can look at, you know, what you already have and say, where do we raise prices? Where do we reconfigure? How can we better retain? What are the partnerships we can use to reach new customers? And like you said, Salisa, that's all really kind of sitting there to take advantage of right now.
So that brings us to our third takeaway, our third idea for you to consider. And we're characterizing this one as employing alignment. And we've been talking about in this episode and in the previous episode about these big strategic goals of revenue and growing enrollments or registrations. Third top strategic goal that we saw was around strengthening alignment with workforce needs. Again, we touched on this in the last episode. And then also one of the trends or issues that respondents found most important for 2025, in fact, the top one, was workforce and employer needs. So job readiness, upskilling, and reskilling. So we're kind of taking those two data points from the survey and kind of combining these because we believe that truly fulfilling workforce needs is going to require your learning business to align with employers.
Yeah, definitely. And this is another area where just taking a little time to look at what you're doing right now and figuring out where you can invest a little bit, make some adjustments, could have some really big payoffs. Now, you know, we've said for years, for example, that demand for educational offerings, and we include courses, credentials, other types of offerings in that, that's going to be heavily influenced by their perceived value in the employer market. So, you know, that's whether learners perceive them as valuable, which is going to be influenced to a large extent by whether employers see them as valuable. So are they actually helpful in getting and keeping a job or in their career advancement? So if you don't have a solid understanding at this point, and by that we mean not just an opinion, but actual data of employer wants and needs in your market, you need to make that a top priority to do that assessment in early 2025, because that can really drive what you're then able to capitalize on in the rest of the year.
That's right. And, you know, this ties to market research. That's a type of market research. And that is a big part of marketing. You know, when you don't just think about promotion, but you think about really understanding the needs of the market that you're serving. And so we know, as we shared in the last episode, that many survey respondents are planning to invest in marketing in 2025. So if you're one of those, you know, this is a place to spend some of those dollars on that market research piece.
Yeah, we've said before, our fear is that when people say they want to invest in marketing, that just means they're going to invest in promotion. So, you know, send more emails, run more ads, you know, do all that sort of stuff. And you may need to do that. But you also have to think about these other aspects of what makes up marketing, and that research into your market and into those needs is really going to inform your product, your positioning, how you distribute it, how you price it, all those other P's that are important in marketing.
That's right. And this is a place, too, where, and I think you already began to talk about it, Jeff, but where partnerships can come into play. So, you know, you might be working with, if you're an association, you might be working with a college or university to create a learning path for the profession and then embed that credential in either a degree or maybe even a non-degree program. And so be thinking about those possibilities. And as part of that, get clear on, is there someone in your learning business with responsibility and accountability for this kind of thinking, this kind of business development? I mean, Jeff, you were talking earlier about who's in charge of some of those pilots for AI. Similarly here, who's in charge of really thinking through what it means to align with employer needs?
Yeah, and because this does go beyond, you know, what typically gets categorized as selling, you know, which is convincing somebody to give you the dollars. You got to build the relationships. You got to build a relationship with the partners, if you're an association, maybe with an academic institution or vice versa, to sort of have the market presence, to have what you need in terms of an offering that's attractive in the marketplace. And then you're going to have to build relationships with the employers in your marketplace. I mean, even if you already know them, hopefully you do, you know, you're not going to be able to just bang on the door and say, hey, give me whatever for these courses. You're going to have to build the case with them. You're going to have to build the relationship. And like you said, Salisa, somebody has to be in charge doing that.
And to tie this back to the overarching theme of resourcefulness, for us, again, hopefully you know who those entities are that you need to be in contact with. If you haven't already formed those relationships, and maybe you do already have those relationships to then build on, but if you don't, odds are you know who you should be talking to in your market to better understand employer needs and wants. And so again, hopefully this isn't about a huge, huge undertaking to really, you know, understand employer needs. It's much more about going to the points and the reference people that you already know, and just being much more methodical and consistent and deliberate about what you're asking them and how you're asking it.
Yeah, definitely. And to tie this back, you know, again, to the revenue discussion, I mean, obviously aligning with workforce needs is going to be both short-term and long-term valuable with revenue. Partnering with other organizations, extending your network to be able to reach the workforce with the right products and get to the people is going to be valuable. And then also, to the extent that you need to develop new products or modify your products to be able to serve employers well, those employers themselves are often the surest place to look for pre-selling or underwriting of what they need. Because, you know, if it's not something that they want to build themselves, but they see the value in, it's very likely they'll be able and willing to underwrite whatever you're developing. You'll have a built-in market for the offering with that particular employer, and you're likely also going to be able to take it out to the broader market and meet other employer needs.
So that brings us to our fourth and final takeaway. And in our experience, learning businesses are often seen as, or certainly often see themselves as, trusted and impartial providers, and they really pride themselves on that. I know this is very common in the association world. And so our fourth and final takeaway, we're calling trusting speed. Because the way that some learning businesses have built that trust is by vetting content, by involving multiple subject matter experts, by establishing a body of knowledge. And those things can take time. So this is around thinking about how can a learning business act nimbly and with speed and keep up with evolving learner expectations and the reality that learners are increasingly turning to Google and YouTube and now ChatGPT and other forms of AI for quick, targeted answers because of that sort of slow way that learning businesses have maybe in the past tended to build their reputation as being that trusted source. Now we know that there's just this need for speed.
Yeah, I mean, speed is tied to trust at this point, because if you're not able to be there quickly with, you know, what that learner needs to meet his or her needs or their organization's needs, that trust is going to start eroding. I mean, even if you do have the history and all of the weight behind you, if a subject matter expert who's got an entrepreneurial or, you know, the regional university, if you're in the association market, or the association, if you're in the academic market, is being more rapid than you are in figuring out what's emerging and what the learners need, and they're able to, maybe they're leveraging AI, as we talked earlier, to help them figure out the products and create the products and get them out into the marketplace. To the extent that that's happening, they become the new trusted source. So organizations really have to dig in and think about where can we move more rapidly and how can we move more rapidly to meet our learner needs.
That's right. And we are, this is the Leading Learning podcast. And for us, leading learning is often about trying to be that pace setter in the field or industry that you serve. And so if you are not the first to market, if you're not speedy, then can you be seen as the leader? I think it's kind of an interesting question, a little bit of an existential question, perhaps, for learning businesses to consider. Now, so much of what we've touched on in this episode and in the past episode, I think ties back to our learning business maturity model.
It does. And, you know, quick reminder to folks that that model has five domains in it: strategy, leadership, marketing, portfolio, which is really your learning products, your learning experiences, and capacity. And I think all of those have come up in one way or another here.
They definitely have. And, you know, the capacity that you mentioned last there, I mean, that very clearly ties to this theme of resourcefulness that we set all of our takeaways tied to. But then, of course, you know, we've been talking about revamping revenue, which, you know, definitely gets at the portfolio. We've been talking about market research and the need for that. And then so much of what we've talked about was just has been around strategy and what is it that you're focused on in 2025. And then to execute on strategy, you have to have that leadership. But we just wanted to re-mention the Learning Business Maturity Model, because that's another resource. We'll make sure to link to that in the show notes as well. We're not done yet. Keep listening, because we're going to recap what we've talked about, and we're going to offer some reflection questions, because you and we both know that spaced repetition and reflection are important tools for learning.
At leadinglearning.com/episode444, you'll find show notes for this episode, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast.
If you enjoy the Leading Learning podcast, please do us and a colleague the favor of sharing this show with one other person who you feel would appreciate and get value from it.
That's right. Walk right up to them and say, you need to listen to the Leading Learning podcast, or pick up the phone and call them, text them if you have to, but find that one person who's going to value the podcast and make sure they know about it. Now, to recap this episode, we offered four ideas, all tied to the theme of resourcefulness. And we described these as aiding, AIDING, strategy, revamping revenue, employing alignment, and trusting speed.
And to help you understand how these ideas might play out in your learning business, we want to offer some reflection questions for you to consider on your own, and then if you have one with your team.
So, based on that first takeaway, ask yourself, where is your learning business with AI? If there are no pilots or tests going underway yet, what can you do in the coming year? And even if you do have pilots or tests going, what can you do to continue those or to run new ones?
And then related to that second takeaway, what might you do to diversify or increase revenue? So this is related to that revamping revenue. So really think through, out of what you already have in your portfolio, what might you do to get more dollars coming in from those same products, or potentially to diversify so that you're less dependent? And that could be, again, less dependent on a business model, not necessarily on specific products. So it could be if you're only doing direct-to-consumer selling at this point, look at business-to-business, for example.
Right. And on that third idea, employing alignment, how clear are you on the needs of employers in the market you serve? Is it time to collect some data? And by the way, that could be through an online survey, or perhaps better yet, some one-on-one in-person or online discussions with key employers.
And then related to the fourth takeaway that we characterized as trusting speed, what else might you try? Where might you make some fast progress to test an idea or concept?
So those are our takeaways and reflection questions. Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.